The Guardian.
This Guardian podcast is supported by Squarespace. From the unusual to the extraordinary, your website stands out when you build it with Squarespace. Start your free trial today at squarespace.com/guardian.
Football, football, Football Weekly Extra. Champions League. Halfway through those group stages, the headlines. Arsenal outpunching Bayern München, and is Jose Mourinho now fully out to luncheon? While results for the Manchester side, a bit of a mixture ahead of their big weekend fixture. There's derby fun ahead too in the Time Wear Clásico, so we'll be looking ahead to all the weekend's excitements in the Premier League and abroad, and with posts, under-researched opinions, and one or two factual errors too, it all adds up to another exciting Football Weekly Extra. Thanks ever so much for joining us today, listeners. It is Football Weekly Extra on the morning that we are midway through the Champions League group stage. Here to talk about that and more, Barry Glendenning.
Hello.
Paul McInnes.
Hello.
And James Horncastle.
Howdy.
All right. Hey, as I say, three games gone out of six in your Champions League group stage. Only one team with a perfect record so far. Who is it, Paul? Is it Barcelona? Is it Real Madrid?
Well, thanks for coming to me as the resident stats man. But I know it's Zenit St. Petersburg.
Right.
Coached by Andre Villas-Boas.
Andre Villas-Boas. Wow. Mind you, they are in a group with Ghent and a pretty shabby Lyon. But anyway.
Got a Ghent in where you
fit
them.
They do have the incredible Hulk.
They certainly do. There's some pretty incredible stats about this week. In Europe, one of the most impressive ones is the fact that not one single Premier League side lost. How about that?
Yeah.
Four of them in action. Biggest winners, I'm going to say, were Arsenal. Arsenal, who defeated Bayern 2-0. Celtic Chuck, among the many people saying apologies to Amy Lawrence on Thursday after she suggested this could happen. And we poo-pooed it, didn't we?
I didn't.
I poo-pooed it. So, what a remarkable result. What a remarkable result. There's so many great bits in this game. There was that incredible skills from Costa on Bellerin. What would you call that?
Double step over with...
There was a nutmeg in there.
Yeah, outside left foot nutmeg.
Oh,
it was a key component. Yeah, it was beautiful.
Yeah. And then there was that incredible Neuer save as well.
Is it just me? We were sitting at home going, oh, he should have placed that in the corner.
Oh, Walcott?
Yeah.
But it was still an incredible save.
When you saw Martial's header in Moscow, you just thought that's the header he needed to do. Exactly. I mean, I know it was closer to goal, but come on, Theo.
All right. The Ozil goal, which was the second goal. Before that, you'd had Giroud's kind of bundled over with his arms a goal in which Neuer hadn't looked impressive. And Arsenal eventually came out 2-0 winners. Where did this performance come from? Because it wasn't just two goals. I mean, they really took it to Bayern.
Well, it came from Manchester City last season, didn't it, really? Where they first took their considerable resources and deployed them as a counter-attacking side against an elite team and came away with a win. They played on the counter-attack against Bayern. Cazorla was central to that. His distribution when... I thought the defence played very well. You know, there's a lot of talk about Mertesacker being out of his depth, but he was a lion. They held their line very well, and when the ball broke, Cazorla distributed it really effectively, and it was within two passes they were out to Walcott, who was always in acres of space.
Vikas Vijayaraghavan says, is it time to finally acknowledge Arsenal as one of the best defences in Europe? Least number of goals in the Premier League this season, and possibly 2015. First team to shut out Bayern. Yeah, Bayern have been a goal machine.
Yeah, check after that disappointing debut in the Premier League for Arsenal, if you like, against West Ham. You know, very much radiated assurance, composure. I think that's helped a lot. But, I mean, Arsenal seem to have really flipped the script, if you like, because, you know, the last few years, we've always said that they're flat-track bullies. You know, they beat the teams that are in mid-table and at the bottom of the table. But when it comes to facing big teams, yeah, they always struggle. And instead, we've now seen, as Paul said, against Man City last season, but Chelsea in the Charity Shield, Manchester United this season, they seem to have discovered this big game mentality. It's against, again, as I said, West Ham, Dinamo Zagreb, Olympiakos, that they've switched off a little bit. They haven't approach games in the manner in which they should. But I mean, their form going into this this game was perfect, really. When you think that they'd actually they'd won those last three games by a 3-goal margin: 5-2 against Leicester, 3-0 against United, 3-0 against Watford.
Mm, very impressive. It's not over though yet in this group. No, oh, sorry, Paul.
I just wanted to say one thing about Cech, because James is right. I mean, he's made a massive difference, and his performance on Tuesday was just great. It was a real elite level. And there was just one moment that really stuck with me when the ball came to Monreal. It was just on the edge of the box, and he tries to pass it back to Cech, but he completely makes a hash of it, and the ball's about 10 yards away from him and could be running out for a corner. But Monreal just immediately turns away and faces out, because he knows that not only will Cech get to the ball, but he'll make a decent clearance of it with his left foot, which indeed he does. So if you think back to kind of Chesney times or whatever.
Or Spina times, in the two times that Wenger decided to select him. But it'd be churlish to go back and question Wenger for that, probably, after such a terrific result. As I say, it's not over, though, by any means, for Arsenal in their battle to get out of this group. It's now a Bayern Munich and Olympiakos on 6 points, Arsenal and Dinamo Zagreb on 3 behind them. In the meantime, Arsenal can go top of the Premier League this weekend, if only for 24 hours. They're going to be at home to Everton, who haven't won away to Arsenal since January 1996. But who isn't expecting Arsenal to go and lose this?
Well, you've Everton coming into this game on the back of a very bad performance against Manchester United. So we don't know how much the death of Howard Kendall affected the general mood around the club last Saturday. I'd imagine it probably did. I think we touched on this on Monday. I'd imagine it affected the mood around the club, possibly not many of the players, who probably don't know Howard Kendall or may have, you know, met him or be aware of him, but wouldn't it necessarily hold him in as huge regard as everyone else at the club. But yeah, so you've Arsenal going in on the back of a brilliant result, Everton going in on the back of a very poor performance, and yeah, the smart money would be on Arsenal to mess this up. But yeah, I suppose it'll show us what they're made of this season, and is it the same old Arsenal? I mean, I thought it was quite funny, actually, because Bayern Munich sort of did an Arsenal on it on Tuesday. You know, you're not used to seeing Arsenal only have 27% possession and still win.
Arsenal fans are going to be crazy right now. They've just beaten Bayern Munich, and we're still being rude about them.
No, I'm not being rude about them at all.
You just said Bayern Munich did an Arsenal.
Yeah. Well, it's a classic. It's what Arsenal has become a byword for, basically dominating possession and still somehow managing to lose. I thought it was a great performance, but they did have to ride their luck a bit.
Yeah, that's true.
The difficulty for them this weekend will be that whenever you play a Bayern Munich or a Barcelona and you don't have the ball, you run around a lot. It takes a lot out of the team. And they lost Ramsey to injury in that game as well. So, yeah, I think it'll depend a lot on how Arsenal recover in the next few days from that exploit.
And just a little thing about Everton is that they're a largely possession-based side who have slightly reinvented themselves to be a bit more direct and hit on the counter-attack this season. They've had a couple of decent away wins. So, that's something to look out for them.
Right. I wonder how much it's going to cost their fans to turn up at the Emirates after the Barm protest, which was applauded by the Arsenal supporters.
I think this is something that's really increasingly ludicrous, that there is no action on away ticket prices. I mean, the 20 Ace Plenty campaign is highly commendable and has been commended on this pod before, but I think it's about time it was enacted. There is no reason why Premier League clubs cannot subsidise away fans. Absolutely no reason whatsoever.
Wow. That's just one of the exciting games coming up this weekend. In a couple of seconds, we're going to be talking about the Manchester sides, what they did midweek, what's going to happen in the derby, and Paul's going to give us a heads up on the new Bond film.
Ooh.
This Guardian podcast is supported by Squarespace. From the unusual to the extraordinary, your website stands out when you build it with Squarespace. Their designer templates let you easily create a unique and beautiful website that looks perfect on any device. See why some of the world's most influential people, brands, and businesses choose Squarespace. To start your free trial, head to squarespace.com/guardian.
Paul, then, you went to see Spectre last night.
Yeah, they started doing this thing to make it more of an event. They have one screening. So this is the first public screening in the world of Spectre last night.
How many stars?
I'd only give it 3. I got bored after an hour.
Really? Best moment?
It's all Daniel Craig, kind of, and his kind of twinkle in the eye, little witticisms. And he keeps on saying, that's lovely, all the time, when he means it's really not lovely.
Oh, right.
So it's kind of... But there's no... there's some big set pieces. It starts off in the Day of the Dead in Mexico City.
Oh, cool.
And there's a big kind of explosion and fight in a helicopter.
Right.
And I was
Is this before the credits?
Yes.
And then
the
it goes,
classic.
Bam, bam.
The classic.
Oh, fantastic.
Peter Bradshaw gave it 5 stars.
Did he?
Yeah.
Right.
Obviously, I haven't seen it, but I'm deeply sceptical already because I haven't enjoyed any of the last 3 Bond movies.
Really? No. Okay. Well, more when we know more. Hey? Good baddie, though, at least?
Yeah, he is a good baddie. He's not as good as Javier Bardem, who's, for me, one of the best baddies in a Bond film.
Really? But that was just silly when he took his jaw out and stuff.
Yeah, but he was menacing, wasn't he?
I suppose he was. Do you know who'd make a great Bond villain?
Sam Allardyce.
I'll give you a clue. Yes, he would. You're right. No, he could be the henchman, but I'm seeing under a volcano, I'm seeing a man going, the referee was weak and naive. He didn't want to give the penalty. I don't know why. Yeah, Jose Mourinho. Speaking there, kind of, I thought he was a little bit mumbling after the 0-0 draw away at Kiev in the Champions League. But it turns out there was a little bit of a method to his moaning. This was the exact phrase that Arsene Wenger had used after Arsenal's game at Stamford Bridge, and Jose's noticed the fact that he didn't get sanctioned by the FA, so that's now his new phrase that he's apparently going to trot out at every occasion. The referee was weak and naive.
Is this Jose Mourinho in any way related to the Jose Mourinho who once accused Arsene Wenger of being a voyeur and being obsessed with him?
Mm.
Because the tables certainly seem to have turned now.
He's
absolutely obsessed with Wenger. It's strange behaviour.
Well, anyway, he didn't get a penalty in that 0-0 draw away at Kiev.
And to be fair to him, at least on this occasion, it should actually have been a penalty.
That's so interesting, because we had Howard Webb. Now, Howard Webb has had good games and he's had bad games, but he does know refereeing fair amount. In another part of the gargantuan BT studio, Rio Ferdinand was saying much the same as you, it should have been a penalty. We, with Howard, felt it shouldn't have been a penalty at all. It was actually Fabregas who runs into the back of the defender. He jumps over a vaguely outstretched leg, and you could maybe make a case for that. But the contact comes after he runs into the back of the defender.
Anyway, right, well, now you've sowed a seed of doubt in my mind. I'll have to have another look at it.
Anyway, it ended as a 0-0 draw.
By the way,
yes,
Howard looks very lonely on your show.
Yeah, you should stick him in the middle of the journalists.
All right.
So you can
be a bit more inclusive. Someone put on Twitter last night.
I know. That was just an unfortunate screen grab.
Well, I don't know.
It was.
It's almost like you've got your little clique and Howard's an outsider.
No, that photo made it look like that.
And I
assure you, nothing is further from the truth. He's very much the alpha male of that table. I think what it is just because he's not so used to being on TV. Most of us, even when we're feeling a little bit lonely up there on screen, can still smile along as if we were part of the party. But Howard hasn't yet realised that, you know, the camera can play tricks. That's all. We like Howard, don't we?
Yeah.
You're bullying him.
It's Howard's
way.
That's
what I'm saying.
I think also Howard's, you know, he's a professional police officer. He's there. And I think what you're seeing in that glance, and if you haven't seen the picture, go and seek it out. What you're seeing in that glance is him casting a steely eye over the surroundings to see what miscreants are up to what behind the cameras. And thank goodness he is, because, frankly,
sitting there looking, you know, I'm not accustomed to hanging around with a bunch of metrosexuals, and I don't think I'd choose to again. That's what I was thinking.
Or maybe he's like a policeman undercover, like you see sometimes in maybe a student bar or something, where you've got these two big clodhoppers sitting at the counter drinking orange juice, trying to look inconspicuous and not like policemen.
Right. Yeah, there is a bit of that. Okay. Anyway, Porto in that group are on 7 points because they beat Maccabi Tel Aviv 2-0. Kiev are on 5. Chelsea a point behind them on 4, but with Kiev to visit Stamford Bridge next. And then the Tel Aviv very much bringing up the rear. So you think that's decent, yeah?
I thought it was a good point.
Yeah.
And as well, they can take heart from the performance and kept a clean sheet, which is something they don't do very often these days. So, all in all, I'd say if you'd said to Jose before the game, you know, you're going to come away with a point, a clean sheet, and a chance to have another gratuitous swipe at Arsene Wenger, he'd have taken it. No problem.
All right. Well, I wonder what he's going to get this weekend when Chelsea will be visiting West Ham, a West Ham side who are in fourth place in the Premier League, a West Ham side who've beaten Liverpool, who've beaten Arsenal, who've beaten Man City. all away from home, of course.
Yeah, they like to play on the counter, don't they?
Hmm. But the visit of Chelsea, does that allow them to play on the counter anyway?
I think Chelsea are quite happy to sit in sometimes, aren't they? I've heard.
Hmm.
And invite them on and then hit them on the break. And they've got their own, you know. It's good to see Hazard back in the side, and they can probably, you know, Pedro have had a rest for midweek.
Chelsea coming off a win last weekend in the Premier League when they beat Villa 2-0, or kind of Villa self-destructed in front of them. How much confidence have you in them to continue their crawl back up the table?
Not a lot. I still don't have a lot of confidence in them. Last week's win, it's Villa. You're going to beat Villa. You could just show up and beat Villa these days. I think Chelsea against Dinamo Kiev created very little that was clear-cut, and that's been the story of their season so far. Almost all of their chances are from set pieces or from Willian free kicks or shots from outside the box. They're toothless when Costa isn't in the side, and when he is in the side, they don't really create a lot for him. I mean, some of his goals have been quite scrappy. Mm. That's still a concern for Chelsea.
And at the back, big problems. Ivanovic was a problem when he's in. He's now a problem when he's out, because it doesn't seem like they've got a decent pair of fullbacks anymore. West Ham have all sorts of weapons with which to punish them.
Yeah, Dimitri Payet, of course, created more chances than anyone in the league. Should be in the France team. Lanzini as well, who's been a great signing for them.
It's like 90% pass completion or something like that with Lanzini. He used to play the number 10 Pablo at River Plate, and he's still under 21, so he's somebody who's got a lot of room to develop.
They also got Andy Carroll, who's fit again. Yeah. Can sort of try and knacker out Chelsea's centre halves and then bring him on to give them all sorts of hell. This will say a lot about both teams, I think, this fixture. It's an interesting one. Slaven Bilic on Saturday after the game, when he was staring deep into the dark recesses of my soul, he was making the point. He was asked, why are you better away from home than you are at home? And his theory, such as it was, it was just, he didn't seem quite sure, but he reckoned that they're a lot more patient away from home, and that, if they need to get from one side of the field to the other away from home, they'll just go about it in a more roundabout way. Then, whereas at home, because their home fans are watching them, he thinks maybe the players feel under more pressure to get things done quickly, and they rush things. And so maybe if he can instill the attitude they play with away from home to their home performances, that would do them no end of good.
Job done.
I just think for Chelsea, they need to reset, and I think the performance in Kiev was a good one, a good building for that, because they were very solid and very resolute.
They need a win to dispel, especially all those rumours of major eruptions within the camp, players telling Jose to do one and that kind of thing.
Yeah. And liking reports of moves away on Instagram.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Really? Who did that?
Eden Hazard. Yeah. Or did he? Was it photoshopped?
Who can tell, Jimbo? Who can tell?
I'm not sure.
I saw a story today about some... Apparently, Jose Mourinho was walking down the street in Knightsbridge and he spotted some kid filming him on his mobile phone and apparently shoved him out of the way.
Well, the footage seems to indicate that, but...
He's so paranoid, you could imagine. Yeah, this... He's just... I mean, this whole Wenger obsession, it's descending into Madrid-level madness already.
Really?
Yeah, definitely.
All right. Or maybe there's a method behind it all. Guess we'll see. For now, Chelsea way down in 12th place, 6 points behind West Ham. Mention those Manchester sides who have themselves a derby at Old Trafford Sunday afternoon. Man City with the winners midweek, 2-1. Another late goal, another late winner for Pellegrini's side. KDB, Kevin De Bruyne. Ooh, amazing stats here. He's had 6 games. 2 of them he's played on the left, 2 of them he's played on the right, 2 as a number 10 and 1 in a role I'm not exactly sure what he did there. But anyway, he's had 5 goals and 4 assists. Basically, he can play anywhere. It doesn't matter. He still does the job. And he's so professional afterwards. It looked like he barely broken sweat.
He sounded really sad to have won the game, didn't he? Like that they didn't win 4-0. I mean, he is a quality player, and he will make a real difference for City over the course of the season, I'm sure, providing he stays fit. I think it was a great finish, great goal, but it was it, I think, a bit of an indictment on Wilfried Bony that came to pass at all. I mean, long before that point, the only chances that City were creating were from outside the box, which didn't really... They kept on launching it from 25 yards, which didn't show an awful lot of confidence in their number nine, I didn't think.
It was after Bony went off, Fernando came on, Yaya Toure moved a bit further up.
And Kevin De Bruyne basically went to number nine.
All right. Is that how he's going to approach this weekend's game then away at Old Trafford, Pellegrini?
I wouldn't... I mean, you know, Bony actually played well in the league at the weekend.
Right.
I would have thought if... You know, there might be some permutation, but they're not exactly overly spoiled with resources at the moment, given the injuries, that he'll probably try and play similar to the 11 that started this week in midweek.
Right. Champions League, anyway, they're 1 point now behind Juventus, who drew 0-0 at home to Mönchengladbach there in group... What's that? Group D. But Man United, meanwhile, a 1-1 draw for them at Cesca. It was a Martial handball that gave Cesca the lead. Then it was a Martial headball. Really, which equalised for United. That's his fifth goal in nine games for the teen.
Yeah, and he's brought other presents to the party as well. It was a funny...
Were you expecting more after their triumph at Everton from this Man United side?
Not necessarily. Their performance in the first half was dreadful, surprisingly bad. Just, it was sort of the Manchester United from earlier this season, really ponderous... Moving from lots of possession but not doing anything with it, no pace. Funnily enough, as you probably know, BT Sport had three Manchester United old boys on their panel, Hargreaves, Scholes and Rio, and they were incredibly critical at half-time, you know, saying, yeah, just bewildered and baffled by the lack of pace. You know, Cesca kept things very narrow, so you would have expected Manchester United to take advantage of the space they were given down the flanks. Didn't do it. But they turned things around at half-time and were a lot more impressive in the second half.
Right. Van Gaal going to the Fellaini protocol, which a lot of people say is not a good sign. Just felt after the selection he'd come up with in team terms on the weekend that this maybe was a step back into confusion for him.
He's always into... I mean, he changes his team every week, every game. He doesn't stick with the same 11, which is, you know, obvious counterpoint being Mourinho, who likes to do that. I didn't think they were much better in the second half, but they did have the majority of possession.
Mm.
And, you know, if you play, you can play slow and sort of non-Premier League-like, but keep the ball and get an impressive point away from home in Russia.
It was notable as well that Jesse Lingard started. I think it was his first ever start in Europe. And Memphis was again consigned to the bench. So, you know, there's been talk about his lifestyle being an issue. He's a bit of a party boy. He's always been pictured out and about with, you know, various ladies. Or maybe it's the same lady. I don't know. But anyway, you know, rumour has it that Ryan Giggs has taken him aside and had a word.
Oh, right, because Ryan Giggs has been a paragon of...
Do as I say, not as I do.
Right. Okay. We'll see, eh?
Mm.
So the derby, anyway. City won three of the last four meetings with their neighbours. But United took it 4-2 at Old Trafford. Last season, they're 2 points behind City. If they win this, maths suggests that they will overtake the Citizens. They are coming back from that long trip to Russia.
Mm. Van Gaal getting his excuses in early, saying, yeah, City have got an advantage because they've been able to play at home and we've had to make this long journey.
I mean, it's kind of fair enough to say that, isn't it?
Yeah,
I'm sure it is. It's not like back in the old days. They're not on some rickety old Aeroflot plane with bits falling off it and chickens running around in the hold and, you know, sitting on bales of hay. I think these days,
right?
You know, I presume they're on a private plane, the absolute best comfort available. And, you know, maybe their journey is... Man City are the away team, so, you know, one cancels out the other, I'd
say. That's true. The traffic, you know, for them to get across to Old Trafford.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Mm.
What, Paul?
I was just going to make a boring point about them being elite athletes, and it's like these small margins that make a difference. Soz.
Now, in other Champions League news... Oh, are we going to... A prediction for the derby?
I couldn't call it.
Paul, could you call it? What do those fine margins tell you?
I think a draw, because it'll suit both teams.
James?
I think City will win.
All right. In other Champions League news this midweek, PSG Real. What a disappointment that was. Only 0-0 at the Parc des Princes. However, a couple of really great stats emerging from that particular fixture. One, it's the first time that Real Madrid have had a 0-0 draw in group stage Champions League football in 8 years. Pwah, incredible. And how about this? Cristiano Ronaldo doing his usual legs akimbo, chest puffed out stance for a free kick last night, when it was revealed to us that he's only scored 2 in his last, 82 free kicks?
No, 89.
89 free kicks.
89 was a great year.
Yeah, but the point being that he's actually...
Yeah, in this case, the wall didn't come down.
Right.
Where's Pjanic? Right. Pjanic scored another one, didn't he?
He did, didn't he?
Oosh, he's good at free kicks.
Yeah.
What's the numbers there, James? Give us the numbers.
4 free kicks in his last 6 attempts.
Wow. That's better than most people's penalty taking.
It's a good job the Republic of Ireland are very unlikely to give away free kicks around their own penalty area when they play Bosnia and Herzegovina.
Well, that free kick that he scored was part of arguably the game of the week in Europe, which was Roma's visit to Bayer Leverkusen. Roma, who coming off that disastrous trip to Batin Borisov in the previous round. This time it all started badly, and pretty soon they found themselves 2-0 down. But then, oh my word, they scored 4 unanswered goals to go 4-2 up. So, job done. Then Bayer pull one back. And then 20 seconds later, they get another one, and it all ends 4-4.
Yeah, and the blame has gone to the coach for writing a little message on a piece of paper, sending it over to Daniele De Rossi. And he's like stood at the centre circle as Leverkusen kick off, reading this message, almost like taking his reading glasses out and putting them on and going, And then he looks up and, oh God, it's 4-all. So, yeah.
Has anyone ascertained what he wrote on that piece of paper?
Don't concede a 4th goal.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. Mm. Rudy Garcia then in the firing line. Duncan's got a pigeon ass. Chicharito and De Rossi, they both got braces in this game. What would have happened to the match ball if they'd both hit hat-tricks? Ooh, that's a question. Although there's more than one match ball, isn't there?
That's
your answer. Anyway, I know you want to know the situation in that group. Well, Barcelona, who beat Batin Borisov, then top on 7 points, then Leverkusen on 4, then Batin on 3, Roma bringing up the rear on 2 points. Roma have a massive game this weekend, don't they, James?
Yeah, against Fiorentina, top of the table.
Right. And it's so exciting at the top of Serie A because you've got 6 teams within 3 points of each other. Roma in second place, are they not?
They are indeed. Only 2-0s in Serie A so far this season.
Right.
Juve looked a bit flat against Borussia Dortmund from the highlights. Did you see that game or have any thoughts?
Yeah, their problem so far this season has been scoring goals. They've only scored 8 in 9 league games. It's encouraging in some respects that they've stopped conceding. But... Allegri criticised a little bit for introducing Dybala gradually. He's their big €32 million signing, and I think their top scorer so far this season. He's been on the bench for that game against Gladbach and was brought on, and likewise in the Derby d'Italia at the weekend, which were back-to-back 0-0 draws. But yeah, they huff and they puff, but they just can't blow the house down. But
like the wolf,
yes,
with pigs. That's I get that one.
Thank you very much, Michael.
Right. Officer Dybala, as I call him. He's a good dribbler.
He is.
Yeah, we all love Dybala and we'd like to see more of him. Well, Dybala is rather disappointingly they call him. Anyway, that is a quick Champions League summary for you. After the next little interruption, we'll be going full on with the remaining Premier League games, which include, Barry, a Weir Tyne derby.
Hello everyone, producer Ben here. Just to let you know, you'll be able to download my new book from Monday the 26th of October. It's called Podcast Master and it's about the history of podcasts, the future of podcasts, how to start your own podcast and how to build your audience. That title again, Podcast Master. It's out next Monday.
Hey listeners, if you're sat there enjoying today's pod and thinking, I'd just like to see this happen right in front of me, in front of my very eyes. Well, of course, Football Weekly Live affords you that very opportunity. And after our sellout show in Brighton...
Wasn't sold out.
It kind of was.
Once they closed half the theatre, it was definitely sold out.
We sold out our allocation.
Yeah, but the upper circle was completely empty. We could have got more people in, is what I'm saying.
It was a good crowd.
It's a good crowd. A lovely crowd. We love you, Brighton.
Yeah.
Anyway, we're going to be at Birmingham, and the narrative is very much that you've got to get those tickets soon because they sell out. Otherwise, we'll close
business. Oh, sorry.
Anyway, you can do that.
I'm dangerous because I'm honest.
Guardian.com/Guardian Live. Birmingham, we're going to be in Birmingham on November the 12th. And exciting news this, for those who like to plan ahead, on December the 2nd, a full fortnight before the new Star Wars film opens, you can see another stellar battle in London as Football Weekly Live returns to the capital, featuring in the lineup, according to Ben, Barney Roney. Yeah, the Whimsy live. Wow, I'm going to get my ticket for that. Now, that's almost as exciting as what's happening at the Stadium of Light this Sunday, Barry. It is the Weir Tyne Derby. Now, this is the game that Sunderland always win no matter what. So it doesn't matter, I guess, that Newcastle are coming off that incredible 6-2 win and things seem to be falling into place for Steve McLaren, and Sunderland are still rubbish under Big Sam Allardyce.
Yeah. I was thinking about this fixture again, you know, because I was listening to the radio and there was... being bigged up as one of the massive games of this weekend. And I've just gone, is it? Is it really?
Well, it kind of is because they're both down in the bottom three and points.
But I mean, it's obviously a huge game for fans of both teams. But outside of that, I'm not sure there's going to be a huge amount of public interest in it. I think people have sort of gone, oh, God, look at the state of them now.
What do you think?
It is very much a sort of sense of tallest pygmy in the village about this particular battle, and it's a tricky one. Sunderland home advantage. Sunderland have the sort of psychological wood on Newcastle in that they've won so many of these in a row. I think it's four in a row.
Five
in a row, sorry.
They've outscored Newcastle 8-1.
And Sunderland have shown, I think only in the first half of their game against Villa, and admittedly Villa aren't very good, that they can play a bit when they put their minds to it. And then Newcastle have the benefit of that great win over Norwich last Sunday, in which they did show up many defensive frailties. Whether or not Sunderland are able to take advantage of those defensive frailties remains to be seen. Like the Manchester derby, I just think it's a really, really tough one to call.
Any team that can score six and quite happily have conceded six in that game like Newcastle, they've got to be worth a little bit of a watch this weekend, though.
Yeah, but I mean, this has been the issue for Sunderland all this season, is that I think they've only had three players in nine games to have managed two shots on target. They're very meek going forward.
So only three of their players in the course of nine games have managed to get at least two shots on target?
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, Newcastle definitely have the better squad, but I think Sunderland definitely have the better manager. And, you know, I think one set piece could win that game, I think.
That's all it needs, one set piece.
Yeah, I mean, they were very good. Course, they were very resolute against, you know, unlucky against West Brom last weekend.
There's so much previous in that game as well, isn't there? So much needle between the two managers.
Sunderland kind of have to win because their fixtures after this, I think, Barry, are terrible, no?
Yeah, and say if Sunderland get beaten, they'll be a minimum 5 points adrift of safety already with some nasty fixtures to come.
And before the end of the year, they've got Southampton, Liverpool at home, and Chelsea, Arsenal, Man City, Everton and Palace on the road. So,
well,
doesn't look good.
Doesn't, does it? So, equally the table, not looking good for them. Bottom there, 5 points from safety. Newcastle, 3 points above them. In between those two teams, you've got Aston Villa, who are going to be at home to Swansea early Saturday. Swansea, who Monday night got beaten at home. Their miserable form continuing. They're beaten at home by Stoke. Villa, though, have lost five games in a row, and there's a lot of suggestions that this might be it for poor old Tim Sherwood. He says he's going to come out swinging. He'd back himself. He'd want him in his own corner.
Yeah.
He's certainly in a corner now.
He's
with
backed
Villa,
himself into a corner.
He has
with
a
all
bit.
Those corner analogies.
Yeah,
there was a weird story yesterday that Gary Monk might be leaving Swansea.
On the basis that he hadn't turned up for training, is that right?
Yes, but then Swansea tweeted a photo of him taking a training session, presumably yesterday, saying, oh, it's a Gary Monk lookalike at training this morning. And now I read something today about him.
I wonder, was it Alan Tudyk, the actor?
Or it could have been your man from Homelands.
That's also possible, Damien Lewis. Yeah.
So who knows?
Both actors, so they'd have been, you know, well-placed to step into somebody else's shoes, inhabit that part.
Or maybe it's Damien Lewis who's achieved all that success with Swansea, and now he's off making a film somewhere, so they've had to get Gary Monk out of storage, and that's why it's all gone downhill. I don't know. But now there's talk that perhaps he might be getting someone with Premier League experience in to maybe give him a hand.
Oh, really?
I'm not sure what.
He got them to eighth, didn't he, last year in the Premier League?
Yeah. The only thing I worry about with Gary Monk is that he seems to work so hard, you know, looking after every little detail. And he's also the father of three small children, two baby twins, which, you know, I imagine are quite the handful. So I just don't know where people like that find the hours in the day to.
Plus his filming commitments with Homeland.
They have got the sleeping pods at Swansea.
That's true, they have.
And don't you just build a separate wing on your house to put children in and lock them away?
Joe Cole won't be featuring in that game, Paul McInnes. Why? Because he's gone to League One's Coventry on an emergency loan.
He's another one at Coventry. They've got everybody at Coventry.
Have they? Who else have got at Coventry?
Well, they've got Alan Armstrong, the teenage Newcastle centre-forward who's been scoring a goal a game.
Oh, yeah?
They've got one of our Murphy twins. They've got, quite a lot of talented youngsters, and another all on loan, and then another emergency loan
right.
from Joe Cole.
Okay, is it working out for them?
Not particularly, no.
Okay, that hints the emergenciness of the loan, perhaps, I'm not sure. Anyway, horrible run of games for Villa. After this visit from Swansea, they'll be away at Southampton in the League Cup. Then they're going to be away at White Hart Lane, and then they're home to Man City. Tough run of games, but if you want anybody to be in your corner and come out swinging in those fixtures.
It's high stakes for Villa because Randy Lerner's been trying to sell that club for years now. And they're not going to be a very saleable asset if they're in the Championship, are they?
So. Indeed not.
I saw, while doing the rumour mill this morning, Manuel Adebayor once again being linked with Villa. You have to say that's just absolute desperation. Sherwood has said before that he'd sign him in a heartbeat, but if he does want to sign him, he has to wait till January, when you would imagine he may not manager of Aston Villa any longer.
Right, even though his contract's been rescinded, hasn't it?
Yeah, he can't sign for another Premier League club until January, but he could sign for someone else. Like, say, Galatasaray have expressed an interest in signing him, and they've offered him a 2.5-year deal worth £1.8 million a year, and apparently he's holding out for £2.2 million a year.
Okay, but maybe he might just go and have a reunion with Tim. Anyway, Jared, stupidly, I would think, oh, that'd be a great move for Villa.
No.
Expensive, but maybe effective in the short term? No? All
in
right.
the very short term, he'd score a goal a game for his first three games and then throw down the shovel and, you know.
Well, anyway, Stoke, anyway, who got that win. That was their third win in a row Monday night away at Swansea. They're going to be hosting Watford. Stoke had been bottom of the table, I've forgotten that, after taking 2 points from their first five games. Boy, they turned things around there. Watford haven't had a win in three games now. They're the lowest scorers in the league.
Yeah, if you look at the league table now, it's starting to have the shape that you might have expected, or one that you think might be the case for the rest of the season, with Sunderland, Villa, Newcastle, Bournemouth, Norwich and Watford taking up the bottom six places.
Right, and West Ham and Leicester up at the top, yeah.
Sorry about that. That's true. That doesn't hold, does
but
it?
But down the bottom, I know what you're saying, the promoted sides as well, slipping dangerously close now. Mm. Yeah, Norwich included in that after... Well, what happened, Paul, at Newcastle? And is it going to happen at home to free-scoring West Brom this weekend?
Well, I think it's a good game for us to have, actually, because we've created chances pretty much in every game we've played, even against Southampton, where we got tonked as well. And West Brom heretofore have been pretty blunt in front of goal. But I think there has been something about our gung-ho attitude which got exposed. We defended really badly, which individually and collectively, and that's going to have to be redressed. We don't necessarily have the personnel to change it at the back. We're going to have to play better with the same players. But I expect a response at the weekend.
All right. Bournemouth, also down there, a point below Norwich. Are they going to be hosting Spurs, who are coming off last weekend's goalless draw with Liverpool? Toon Toon says, let's talk about Harry Kane. One goal in his last 12 matches. Is it time to take down the bunting, burn the FIFA 16 cover campaigns, and remember the time that was Harry's before moving on? Are we already writing off Harry Kane?
I still like Harry Kane.
You still like him?
Yeah.
One goal in 12, though.
I mean, players go in and out of form, though. I mean, I think he's a great striker of the ball. I mean, I think he hits the target consistently. I mean, he did against Liverpool at the weekend.
Mm.
You know, a couple of good saves. Could have gone up, could have gone differently. I think he'll come back. But, you know, I like Wayne Rooney, so who am I?
Well, Paul McInnes.
I'm Paul McInnes, sounds, yeah. That's it.
Bournemouth with all sorts of woes. Have they had another big injury this week or not?
Not that I've
heard.
No
big injuries this week for Bournemouth.
There's still time.
But they've got enough to be going on with, poor things. They are right down there, just on the edge of the drop zone. Have lost three of their last six and got hammered last time out, 5-1 by Manchester City. Glenn Murray scored with their only shot on goal in that game. Other games this weekend? Well, you've got Leicester against Palace. That might be an absolute sizzler, no? Palace, terrific on the road. And Leicester, well, they're great, aren't they?
Thrilling. I mean, only Newcastle and Sunderland have spent more time behind than Leicester this season.
And yet, they're up in fifth place. How's that possible?
Indomitable spirit and Jamie Vardy.
Right.
Jamie Vardy scored as many league goals as Thomas Muller this season.
Really?
He has, yeah.
He can join Henri Shearer and Ruud van Aanholt by becoming only the eighth player to score in seven consecutive Premier League games.
Oof.
Do you think he's going to do it, Barry? He's thinking, listeners.
Yes, I do.
All right, Kabay scored three in his last three as well, so he's on a bit of a run. Wow. Are you backing Palace to bounce back from that West Ham defeat?
With money. Actual money.
Mm.
No.
Right, because you think it's going to be Vardy and Leicester. What do you guys think?
Palace away from home. Dangerous.
Dangerous.
Yeah, I think they'll probably have a lead and then Leicester will claw it back again. Perhaps a draw.
I bet it'll be exciting, whatever happens. Liverpool Saints. Final game for us today. Liverpool are in the Europa League at home to Rubin Kazan. Very special night. It's probably happened by now, hasn't it, listeners? Klopp made his debut. Probably they got a big clap for Klopp from the cop and all that kind of thing. But what will they have left in the tank for Saints? I wonder if he's going to... Do you think he's going to rest his team in the Europa League, you know, to keep them fresh for Saints? Can he, with all the injury problems they've got?
I think he'd probably want to build momentum as well.
Build momentum.
He's been talking about the atmosphere at the ground and how he wants to get, you know, wants to get all the fans on side. I think he'll play a strong team.
Okay. Are we predicting mawkishness?
I'm sorry?
Mawkishness ahoy.
At Liverpool?
Well, he's appealed, you know, he wants them to be their loudest ever.
Oh, really?
Ever.
Yeah. Go wild, he said.
Really?
Yeah.
Cool. Mignolet is the keeper with the most clean sheets in the league. Mignolet. Well, there you go. 13 in 2015.
Mm.
For me, that's a surprise. But then they had tightened up a bit at the back, hadn't they, before it all went to pieces for poor old Brendan Rodgers. They're not scoring many goals, though, and Southampton are putting together quite a run of form, are they not, at the moment?
It's an OK run of form, but they did blow a two-goal lead last time out, admittedly, against Jamie
Vardy.
That was
against Leicester.
Yeah.
Yeah. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, you know, they're number nines in form, and that makes a massive difference to Saints.
Right.
Because Pella brings the whole thing together as well as being their main goal threat.
Last weekend's game at White Hart Lane didn't respect the narrative. Is Klopp going to get his big savour of Liverpool triumph this time around?
Not necessarily. I mean, we said already, he's when push comes, he's just a bloke, you know, for all the aura that surrounds him, and his hands are very much tied by the fact that so many of the options open to him are not open to him because they're injured. He had to, you know, his hand was forced in a lot of selections against Tottenham, and Liverpool had to play their fifth choice striker. I'm not sure what exactly the situation is now, but it will take time for him to work his magic, if indeed he does end up working his
magic.
Their
big problem is still scoring goals. They've only got eight in the league so far. Benteke and Sturridge might still be out. I think that's the up against.
Well, Sturridge's swollen knee, which saw him a late absentee from the lineup at White Hart Lane. So, is there further word on whether it's still swollen?
I think there's a chance he could play, but he's not. I mean, he sometimes takes a little while to get back into form, doesn't he? After injury, which is quite frequent.
Although he did come back last time and have an immediate impact.
He did. That's why I put sometimes in, because I just remembered that as I was saying it.
Oh, right.
He's missed 59 games since joining Liverpool in January 2013 as Daniel Sturridge. But Origi did hit the woodwork, didn't he, against Spurs?
And failed to follow
Klopp up. Very much talking him up in his pre-match interview. So they're going to have to look to him. And remember this time last year, there was all that talk about, wow, we need to get Divock Origi back in January. You know, we need to bring that transfer forward. And he almost became
that
a little bit of a...
That was mainly from Lille, who he was playing for, no?
Yes, yeah. But it was almost as though he'd become a little bit of a forgotten man. Instead he's going to have to be at the forefront of this team.
He's been thrust into the spotlight. How will he respond?
But it'll be interesting to see if they can repeat the kind of same intensity as they showed it against Spurs, playing three games in a week, because we saw that they actually ran 8 kilometres more than they had on average under Brendan Rodgers in that game, which is like having another player on the field. So, if they can do that. If they do that against Rubin, can they do it against Southampton again on Sunday, who are a very physical team themselves in that sort of thing?
Well, we'll be back on Monday, listeners, with our reaction to that game and so much more.
Yep.
Excellent. Well, thanks very much for joining us in the meantime, James Horncastle.
Pleasure, as
always. Paul McInnes.
Thanks very much.
Barry Glendenning.
Yep.
And producer Ben. Have a great weekend. Catch you Monday.
This Guardian podcast is supported by Squarespace. From the unusual to the extraordinary, your website stands out when you build it with Squarespace. Start your free trial today at squarespace.com/guardian.